Number three for argument this morning is the University of Illinois against Organon Technica Corporation. Mr. Cruzwater.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. There is just a single issue on this appeal.
There are actually more issues than you acknowledge, because I'm going to give you another. It's appellate jurisdiction. What are we doing here?
I had anticipated that question.
Right, then you already knew there was more than one issue. What are we doing here, Mr. Kurzweil? This lawsuit is brought by the University of Illinois, which lost, and the victor then appeals.
The fault, if you will, lies with the University of Illinois, and let me explain that. Under 1291 and the Supreme Court's decision in Greentree, there appears to be appellate jurisdiction because there is a final order. Now, the thrust of Your Honor's question, I believe,
That's not the question I'm asking, Mr. Kurzweil.
It's a segue into the answer.
No, look. The question I'm asking has to do with why we have an appeal by the victor rather than the loser. It's clear that the order of the district court is final and that the University of Illinois could have appealed it, but it's a pretty profound requirement of appellate jurisdiction that only the loser can appeal. The winner can't appeal.
It is because of the nature of the dismissal. If one looks at the decision.
You've stated my problem. You can't appeal from a district judge's opinion. Your brief is addressed to the contents of the district judge's opinion, and you can't appeal from adverse statements in an opinion. You can only appeal from a judgment. That's what got me to this line of questioning. And if your position is, we're appealing because we don't like the language of the district judge's opinion, we've got no appellate jurisdiction. Is there some other basis for this appeal?
Yes, there is. It is clearly a final determination with res judicata effect.
Look. The district court's order is final. But in order to appeal, you have to be adversely affected. You have to be aggrieved by the judgment and not by the language of the district court's opinion.
We are aggrieved by the judgment. And here is why we're aggrieved by the judgment. What the district court held, this is the holding, is that the arbitration decision was not final. Now, that means res judicata.
Look. It's obvious we're going nowhere here. I'm going to ask the parties to file supplemental briefs. But, Mr. Kurzweil, you have to understand that the holding is not something you can appeal from. That's the content of the opinion. We lawyers refer to holdings as the judge's rationale for decision. You cannot appeal from a judge's rationale. You can only appeal from an adverse judgment.
The reason why this is adverse, is it because it would have res judicata effect? It would have res judicata effect because the district judge held that there was not a final order in the arbitration.
Look,
if you'll indulge me for one moment, Your Honor.
I'm going to stop this. I will ask the parties at the end. I'll give you a time to file supplemental memos. But your memo will not be useful to us. If you take that line in the memo, it will end up in the circular file. You need to address the question the way I have stated it. Okay?
I understand that, and I'm attempting to do that. The question is whether there is appellate jurisdiction.
I said I am going to stop the discussion of this. We will take this up in memos. After you've had a chance to reflect.
What was the issue you said? There was only one issue.
There was only one issue, and the issue was the following. Was there a final decision in an arbitration?
Okay, pound away at that.
I'm sorry?
I say pound away at that.
Okay. There was an arbitration between the parties, and the arbitration took 18 months. At the conclusion of that 18-month period, as Your Honor will see in the record at page A98, page A107, and page A250, there was a decision. And the decision was that the pricing, which was the subject of the arbitration, did not require any changes. That was a final decision. However, what happened next was that the university latched onto the following. The arbitrator had one sentence at the end of his decision in which he said that he reserves the right at some point in the future, should he decide to do so, should additional evidence be presented, to change his mind. Now, 20 days went by, no motion was made to modify. 3 months went by, no motion was made in the federal court under the Federal Arbitration Act. 7 months later, a brand new lawsuit was filed, despite this court's admonition in the Webster case that a lawsuit is not the means by which we seek to challenge an arbitration decision. That is the cause of the entire problem here. It's at the bottom of the questions that Judge Easterbrook asked for the following reason. The university had no basis at all to bring that lawsuit. This court made it crystal clear in Webster that if you want to reopen an arbitration, you do so under the Federal Arbitration Act. Why didn't they do so? They didn't do so because it was 7 months, and they were beyond the 3 months. So they came up with a stunt. And the stunt, if you will, was to bring a lawsuit seeking a declaration that the arbitrator can modify his decision. Once we had that lawsuit, we could not very well default. What we did was we moved to dismiss on the ground, among other things, that there was no basis for this lawsuit to pend. There was no basis because procedurally it was an improper means for going forward and because there had been a final decision. Now, the judge never had a hearing, but sua sponte, he dismissed the case. He dismissed the case on the ground that there was no final decision. Now, that is the nub of the problem. Once he dismissed the case, not because the case lacked proper jurisdiction, but he dismissed the case because, in fact, he was directing us to go back to arbitration. And I say that because there was a holding that there was no final decision. At that moment, we had an appealable order, in my opinion. We had an appealable order because we had a res judicata determination. And certainly, had we not taken this appeal, the next thing that would have happened is we would have been presented with a new proceeding compelling us to go back into arbitration because there was a res judicata determination that the arbitration had never been completed.
What's wrong with going back to arbitration?
What's wrong with going back to arbitration is the following. The parties had an agreement. It's at record A97, I believe, that if they had a dispute, they were going to have a single arbitrator. He was going to be given one question to decide, and the one question had to do with the basis for pricing. And his decision would be, quote, final and binding. The next thing that happened was that when the arbitration occurred, the parties gave a statement to the arbitrator, agreed upon, what is the issue to be decided? I believe it's at the record A107. And the issue to be decided was a single issue. That issue was the pricing to be changed. It was going to be based on an analysis of comparables. It's not relevant for purposes of this morning's argument. And the statement of issue said again, the decision shall be final and binding. At page A224 and 227, we obtained, after 18 months of arbitration, a decision It is called a decision. It's not called an interim decision. It's not called a maybe decision. It's a decision. And the decision did precisely what the arbitrator was required to do. He made up his mind. The fact that he added a sentence after he handed down the decision is of no legal consequence. And the reason it's of no legal consequence is because he didn't have the authority under the agreement of the parties. I see my light is on. Unless there are any further questions, and with Judge Easterbrook's permission, I'll save whatever time I have for rebuttal.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Summerfield.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. Starting with the issue of appellate jurisdiction, we would be happy to provide supplemental authority on the issue. We did, however, in all honesty, see case law, and we were researching the issue, that seems to support what Mr. Kurzweil is saying, that where there may be res judicata attaching to findings adverse to a party, that party can appeal even though it is, quote, the victor below. However, we would be willing to take a closer look at that to satisfy the Court's concerns.
I will emphasize to you, as I did to Mr. Kurzweil, that the thing on appeal is the judgment,
yes, Your
not
Honor.
The district court's explanation for the judgment.
Yes, Your Honor, we certainly
need to be addressed to the content of the judgment and how, if at all, that judgment would be altered to make it, you know, and as Organon thinks it ought to say. I mean, this is all very surprising to me because it looked to me like the university is the loser. The university wanted the district judge to enter an order reopening the arbitration and compelling Organon Technica to continue arbitrating with it. And the district judge didn't issue such an order.
No, Judge, but in fact what did
happen... Whereas Organon Technica wanted the district judge to dismiss the case, which he did.
That's right, Your Honor. The practical effect, however, is, as we know from the record, what ended up happening, and Mr. Kurzweil omitted this one fact, instead of rushing into court after the new evidence came to light, the university attempted to recommence the arbitration. It didn't, in the first instance, go to court and say, please order the arbitration to recommence. We went back to the arbitrator with the new evidence.
Yeah, well, look, counsel, you're just not getting the point. The university ultimately went to the court and asked the court to enter such an order, and the court refused.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, we will be happy to provide supplemental authority on the question of the judgment specifically, as opposed to the facts underlying it. I really was segueing.
Facts underlying it. The opinion.
Yes.
You can appeal from a judgment. You cannot appeal from an opinion.
Yes, Your Honor. That's absolutely correct. That is certainly the rule, and we will be happy to provide authority. My attempt was to segue into the merits now, the issue, as Your Honor.
Zip right into it. Go ahead.
Yes. So, again, we didn't go back in the first instance to a court in violation of the Federal Arbitration Act seeking, one, to get the court to amend the arbitration award per se, or two, to get the court, in advance of talking to the arbitrator, to get an order compelling further arbitration. We went back to the arbitrator. And this is a key distinction. Because what we were trying to do is we were trying to abide by what the arbitrator said in his decision, a decision that's entitled to broad discretion under the authority of this court, both as to content and as to procedure as to how, if at all, he will amend it in the event that new evidence comes to light.
Counsel, suppose a district judge at the end of his opinion, and just before he enters a regular judgment saying plaintiff gets $1 million, the district judge staples a copy of Rule 60B2 to his opinion. And you know what 60B2 says, right? It says if there's more evidence, I'll take a new look at this. Judge staples a copy of Rule 60B2. Does that prevent the order from being appealed because it means it's not final?
No, Your Honor, but in that circumstance, we have the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure that govern the proceeding.
Why is this line in the arbitrator's opinion any different from including a copy of Rule 60B2 with the report?
Because there isn't anything tantamount to the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure governing the
arbitration. That's why I said he's included it. The arbitrator says, as a matter of my arbitral discretion, I'm applying Rule 60B2 to this situation. Does that make the award non-final? I hope you see the reason I'm asking this. It's
yes,
because
Judge,
60B2 doesn't make a district court's decision non-final, and it applies to every single case. So why should an arbitrator saying, you know, in the exercise of my discretion, I'm going to apply Rule 60B2 to this proceeding, make the decision non-final?
Because, Your Honor, in the case of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and the statute, we have an understanding as to what a final judgment is from which an appeal can be taken. When there is a document issued that's called a judgment, that is when you have a final judgment from the court that can be appealed.
I wish it were that simple.
In the case, but Your Honor, in all honesty, in the case of this arbitration, it was a fluid proceeding. There were no rules agreed to by the parties per se. There isn't a federal...
That's fine. So the arbitrator says, I'm going to apply Rule 60B2. We know, in normal civil practice, that possibility doesn't make a judgment non-final. I'm trying to figure out why the identical possibility makes an arbitral award non-final.
Again, because of the deference that the broad discretion that an arbitrator has to determine the procedures by which he will issue a final decision.
Mr. Summerfield, let me jump at this the same problem from a slightly different angle here. I'm not sure this was discussed in the briefs, but this court issued a decision in 1995 that seemed to address this. It's called the Glass Molders against Excelsior Foundry Company, 56 F3rd 844. And there was a problem about reopening an arbitration award. And the court wrote in that case, in essence, that in recognition of the fallibility of earthly lawgivers, every court and every administrative agency that exercises adjudicative authority has been understood to have, at least until the matter is regularized in rules, such as Rule 60, the inherent power to reconsider its decisions within a reasonable time. And then the opinion went on to apply that reasoning to an arbitration award. Why doesn't that apply here?
Well, we think that it would because the arbitrator has, in this circumstance, given himself a reasonable amount of time in which to reconsider what he did, especially in light of the fact...
But I gather he said no.
No, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, the arbitrator's employer, Consor, when it looked at this issue, and the arbitrator's employer's counsel, when it was asked to render an opinion on this issue, said, we have the right to do this. The only reason we're not doing it is because there isn't agreement between the parties as to whether there should be a further procedure or not. Not that this is a final decision, or as Organon has suggested, that this language at the end of the decision was boilerplate. It got in there by accident. It didn't mean what it really said. They didn't say any of that. They said, we think we can do this. However, we want to make sure that the parties will pay us and that there's no further dispute in terms of, you know, whether we get sued by one party or the other for acting ultra vires. So please go to the courts and get clarification on this. Once you do, we will be happy to proceed with the arbitration.
Are you subject to a statutory time limit on this, a 20-day limit under the Illinois statute?
No, Your Honor, because we're not asking the court to do anything to the award. All we're asking is that the arbitrator be allowed to consider the new evidence and do what he will with it. It may very well be at the end of the day that he says, this doesn't matter to me after I've analyzed it, and I'm not going to disturb what I've already done. So that's why the Federal Arbitration Act doesn't apply, these time limits that Organon keeps invoking. It's why the Illinois state statute doesn't apply, because what we were asking this court to do is to allow the arbitrator to make a decision as to what changes to his award, if any, he's going to make. It may very well be that he says, I don't believe this evidence is persuasive. It may be he says it doesn't add anything to the record. It may very well be that he changes his decision. But it's up to the arbitrator to decide that. And it's not up to Organon, and with respect, it's not up to the courts. Ultimately, the arbitrator should be allowed to employ the procedures that he thinks are correct under the circumstances. And because, after being provided with a
jurisdiction, I don't understand why you are not an appellant, if that's your view. You wanted the district court to enter an order compelling Organon to continue arbitrating, and the district judge didn't give you that order.
No, Your Honor, but what the district judge did give us was a decision that says that the arbitration wasn't final. We could have taken that back to Consor and said, okay, we now have clarification from the court, and we believe that Consor would have been perfectly happy to continue with the arbitration at that point. Consor never said we need an order directing us to do this.
Both sides are confusing the opinion and the judgment.
Your Honor, we really are not. We didn't need an order from the district court.
One of you two.
Yes, you did.
Your Honor, as we said, we firmly believe that with
an order from the district court, why did you file this lawsuit?
Because what Consor asked for was guidance from the courts.
Ah, what you wanted was an advisory opinion, which you think you've got.
No, Your Honor, we didn't want an advisory.
That would be a reason why everything the district court did should be vacated, because Article 3 doesn't provide for advisory opinions.
Your Honor, our request below was indeed for an order compelling Organon to continue the arbitration.
I don't give up on this front.
We believe,
on the merits of your question, Mr. Summerfield, I guess I'm still struggling with this. 5 years from now, could you have gone back to this arbitrator with some new evidence?
No, Your Honor, that would have been unreasonable. However, okay. One of the things that Organon...
Where's the reasonable time limit here?
It's
we've got some statutes that provide some limits. We've got, 7, 8 months in this case?
It was, but it was essentially a few weeks after the new evidence came into existence. It was not that this evidence existed right after the arbitration award was issued, and then we waited 7 months to bring it to the arbitrator's attention.
Well, but the time starts to run from the time of the decision. We measure both, right?
That's true, Your Honor. Absolutely.
5 years from now is too late.
That's correct. One of the things, however, that Organon could have done at any time was to follow its own advice and taken the award into a court and get it confirmed. Or it could have gone back to the arbitrator at any time.
They weren't asking anybody you to pay money, were they?
No, but they could have gotten it confirmed as the judgment. In other words, to determine for res judicata purposes that they didn't owe us any money. They could have gone back to the arbitrator and said, hey, we saw this thing at the end here. It seems to keep the record open for an indeterminate period of time. Could you either take it out, or could you put a time limit on it? They didn't do either one of those things. They were happy to let it sit as was. And certainly, again, the question of reasonableness, Your Honor, should be left up to a certain extent to the arbitrator. And the arbitrator and his employer never said, well, you've waited 7 months, that's just too long. Again, they said, we're happy to do this, we think we have the power to do it. But because there's an objection on the part of Organon, we have to get clarification from the courts.
I think they're happy to do it. I think I remember reading last week that Warren Buffett said, never ask a barber if you need a haircut.
Your Honor, we do have to accord some deference to the arbitrators here and assume that they are not acting merely out of self-interest. But we agree that they do have some self-interest.
The arbitrator refused to release his decision until he had been paid and the checks had cleared.
That's true, Your Honor. That is true. There is a certain business aspect of this, but at some point arbitrators have to act reasonably or they won't be arbitrators very much longer. And if word gets out that they, in fact, are willing to keep records open for an indeterminate period of time into perpetuity, chances are parties won't use them. So we have to assume that they are acting reasonably. But really, excuse the expression, they are the ultimate arbiter of that in this instance, and with respect, not the courts. And they never said it's been too long. They never said it's inappropriate to introduce new evidence, and they certainly never said, as Organon suggested, that this was a stray boilerplate that wound up in the decision inadvertently. And they had plenty of opportunity to do that. The fact that they never did, we believe, is very telling. All we're asking for, Your Honors, is the ability to present new evidence to the arbitrator in accordance with the decision that he issued. There are no further questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Kurzweil?
With Your Honor's permission, the case referred to by Judge Hamilton was cited at pages 29 and 30 of Organon's brief. That's Judge Posner's decision, in which Judge Posner upheld the doctrine.
It doesn't matter who writes the opinions in this court.
The court there upheld the doctrine of functus officio, and the discretion of the arbitrator ends the moment the decision is handed down. Once the decision is handed down, there is no more discretion. Although it's not relevant for purposes of this appeal, I would point out that under the Federal Arbitration Act, discovery of new evidence is not a ground for opening up an arbitration.
I thought Glass-Molders held exactly the opposite. The doctrine is there, but there's this exception based on this inherent authority to revisit.
Yes, there's a minor exception to clarify an order. Mm-hmm. There is not a loophole, if you will, for new evidence. In other words, if there's something confusing about an order, there is a minor exception to the doctrine. But what's settled, and I'll point out that it's an old doctrine, but it's still good law, what is settled is the moment the arbitrator issues his decision, then there is no further discretion. The arbitrator has a world of discretion until that moment. Once there's a decision, under Illinois law, if they wanted the arbitrator to do something, if they felt the decision was inappropriate or wrong, they had 20 days. If they wanted to go to federal court to have the order set aside, they had 3 months. They didn't do anything in 20 days. They didn't do anything in 3 months. And parenthetically, if your honors look at the record at A-246, there was no new evidence because the claim new evidence had been presented in a different form, but the underlying information at page 246 of the appendix had been presented. Counsel, your honor had indicated the willingness to take supplemental briefs on the issue of whether there's appellate jurisdiction. And, of course, we'll do so. But counsel's argument, in effect, made the point. Counsel views Organon as an aggrieved party. The reason why counsel didn't take an appeal, and we did, is because counsel believes there is a judicial determination.
Yes,
now, I understand
it's
your honor.
Both sides look like what they wanted was an advisory opinion from the district court, and they think they got it, and they don't think the judgment actually has any role in any of this.
No, we did not want an advisory opinion. No, we didn't bring the lawsuit.
Illinois wanted it, and
right.
They think they got it, and you don't like it. But we're not in the business of either issuing or reviewing advisory opinions.
I know that, Your Honor, but I think we had no choice other than to take this appeal because of the finding. In any event, the court had indicated that we would submit, we had the right to submit supplemental briefs.
Yes, the parties are invited to file supplemental briefs within 14 days on the question of appellate jurisdiction.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is, or will be, taken under advisement once the